This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show. You're listening to the Zoomer Week in Review, brought to you by CARP, a new vision of aging. Support CARP with your membership today. Visit carp.ca.
Good afternoon and welcome to the Zoomer Week in Review, all things Zoomer worldwide. I'm Libby Znaimer. In honor of the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz, we tell the little-known story of a Polish patriot who snuck into the camp to try to organize a rebellion and warn the Allies of Nazi crimes. And Freedom 55. For years, there were ads dangling that prospect for the baby boom generation. Now it turns out, for most people, retirement is very different from what they expected. But first, here are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. While the federal government is still consulting on how to expand access to medical assistance in dying, the Quebec government has announced plans to offer the procedure to people with severe incurable mental illness. Health Minister Danielle McCann says people with mental health issues who are not responding to treatment would be able to ask for MAID. But she stressed such cases would be exceptional, a psychiatrist would have to be consulted, and the delay before medical aid in dying is given would be longer. This week, Ontarians honored a trailblazer, the Honorable Lincoln Alexander, who served as Canada's first Black MP, Cabinet Minister, Lieutenant Governor, and was also a member of the RCAF during World War II. The government held Lincoln Alexander Day on January 21st to honor his service and celebrate his life. He was 90 when he died in 2012.
We are called to find something in our lives worth fighting for.
Actor Martin Sheen joins the growing list of Zoomer celebrities to be arrested as part of Jane Fonda's climate protests. This week, Sheen and fellow actor Joaquin Phoenix were arrested in the U.S. Capitol. Phoenix called out the meat and dairy industries for their role in the climate crisis.
I just can't wait to get well and have to go on the road again. That's what's killing me. I need it, you know. That's my drug today.
71-year-old heavy metal legend Ozzy Osbourne revealing he has Parkinson's disease. The diagnosis came after a fall last year that led Ozzy to cancel several tour dates. Parkinson's is a nervous system disorder that affects movement. Jim Lehrer, the legendary American public television anchorman, has died at the age of 85. For 36 years, he gave PBS viewers an alternative to network evening news programs with in-depth reporting, interviews, and analysis of world and national affairs. He's best known for the McNeil Lehrer Report, which he co-hosted for two decades with Canadian Robert McNeil, who is 89. I'm Libby Znaimer, and those are your Zoomer headlines from around the world. World leaders gathered in Jerusalem this week for Israel's largest ever diplomatic meeting to commemorate the Holocaust. Tomorrow marks 75 years since the liberation of the Nazis' most notorious death camp, Auschwitz, where 1.1 million people were killed, the vast majority of them Jews. Before it became ground zero for the final solution, a Polish agent snuck into the camp on a secret mission to destroy it. Author Jack Fairweather came to the studio to tell the little-known story of Witold Pilecki, the volunteer.
I was a war correspondent in Iraq and Afghanistan, and I just left the region and was struggling to come to terms with my experiences. I met an old war reporter friend who was on his own journey. He'd been to Auschwitz. He told me about a resistance cell in the camp, and I was completely blown away by that idea. I thought of Auschwitz, I think maybe like a lot of your listeners, as this death factory, place where people went to die. And the idea that anyone could resist in a place like that was incredibly fascinating to me. I knew I had to find out more.
And how did you find Witold Pilecki? He actually volunteered to go into the camp. How did that happen?
Witold Pilecki was a Polish cavalry officer before the war, gentleman farmer. But for the war, he probably would have lived out his days in eastern Poland, raising crops, working with his local reserve unit. Pilecki, he joins the underground in Warsaw shortly after the German invasion. And it's this brutal, repressive regime that the Nazis impose. There was no plan at that stage for the final solution. Nazis instead were intent on dismantling Poland, their first conquest. Auschwitz was set up in June 1940 in order to be a holding place for Polish nationals, a place where they could be brutalized, center of terror for the country. Little was known about what was happening inside early on. The underground turned to Pilecki, who was working as a recruiter, and said to him, would you volunteer for a mission to Auschwitz?
Okay, and he said yes. Now, how did he get himself into Auschwitz?
Right. Well, he said yes. He said yes. He didn't sort of raise his hand, as perhaps volunteering suggests. He had to have a long think about it. He thought the idea was crazy. He had a wife and kids. That was some of the reasons why I was drawn to his story coming out of Iraq. I've identified with this man who had a lot to lose. But Pilecki, he also realized that Poland was losing the war. This was 1940. Only Britain still stood on continental Europe. The Americans weren't in the war yet. This was his chance to make a difference. So he volunteered. That meant he had to get himself arrested. He walked into a German roundup and got sent to the camp.
And what did he do when he got there?
The camp was not the death factory we know it today. It was a concentration camp for Polish nationals. It was a place of incredible brutality. Prisoners were on starvation rations, forced to do hard labor. Pilecki was beaten, bruised, shaved, stripped of his identity, and was in shock for his first few days. And for me, that's really one of these amazing moments in his story when he begins, despite those hardships, to reach out to the men around him, suffering like him, and says to them, would you help me start fighting back against the Germans?
And when was this?
This was in September 1940. And he soon began to form a cell that expanded and grew. By 1942, 2 years into his time in the camp, he had over 1,000 men working for him in Auschwitz. They were sabotaging facilities, assassinating SS officers, and of course, reporting on what was happening in the camp, stealing Nazi documents, copying them, smuggling out to the camp, getting word to the Allies about what was happening. He starts in Auschwitz when it's a place for the brutalization of Polish political prisoners. Over the course of 2 years, Auschwitz is a crucial testing ground for the Nazis as they work out the logic, the technological capacity to mass murder. That's what he witnesses, first of all, of his fellow Polish prisoners, start of euthanization experiments. Then Soviet POWs arrive and they begin gassing them in experimental chambers. And then, of course, the final solution begins. And Jewish families from all over Europe are brought to Auschwitz. And that's what Pilecki reports on in 1942. He organizes an incredible breakout from Auschwitz to get word to the Allies about the Holocaust. It's really one of the most spectacular of stories. Four of his men steal German officer uniforms and then take Commandant Hirsch's car and drive out of the main gate carrying news of the Holocaust.
And he wanted the Allies to bomb it. He said, even if we all die, it would be worth it.
That was one of the most amazing parts of the research for me. He said, please, for the love of God, bomb this camp, even if it means killing everyone in it. Because what's happening here is so terrible, we have to stop it. And that was in October 1940. And for me, that's one of the great might have beens of history. What would have happened had the Allies heeded his call to bomb the camp in 1940?
What do you think the significance of this story is 75 years after the liberation?
I think his story is so important. For me, Pilecki is one of the greatest heroes of World War II. What he did in Auschwitz was of a level of bravery that's almost inconceivable. Every day he was in that camp, he risked his life to try and tell us about what was happening.
What happened to him in the end?
Well, this is the second tragedy of Pilecki's life. The first being, of course, that the Allies didn't heed his message from the camp. The second one was this. In 1945, he took up arms against the communist takeover of Poland. It fell under the yoke of Stalin. And Pilecki, like a lot of Poles, had this terrible choice. Do you surrender to communism or do you carry on fighting? And that's what he did. He created a cell in Warsaw to report on communist crimes against the Polish people. He was captured, he was interrogated, tortured brutally, and put on a show trial. And this is the reason why you haven't heard of his story. The communists, after killing him, hid away or destroyed all of his wartime reports. It was a really touching part in the research, you know, speaking to Pilecki's son, Andrei, in his mid-80s, you know, him telling me that up until the early 90s, they simply didn't know what their dad had done in Auschwitz.
What do you think the resonance will be? I mean, all the surveys show that, you know, a majority of young people in North America don't know what the Holocaust was, don't know what Auschwitz was. There's a terrifying rise in anti-Semitism at the moment.
I agree, and I think it is every generation's responsibility to find new ways to engage with the Holocaust. I was really struck researching this book. I got to speak to a lot of survivors in their 80s, in some cases their 90s, men and women who had known Pilecki, fought with him in some extraordinary cases. And you, even in the last 5 years of research, half of those people have died. And, you know, I felt a great responsibility in writing the book that I wanted to transmit their memories. I hope Pilecki's story can be a way for people to come afresh to the camp. It's a new story. It's a new way of thinking about Auschwitz. And, you know, I really encourage people to learn more about Pilecki.
Jack Fairweather, thanks so much.
Thank you.
That was Jack Fairweather, author of The Volunteer. Monday marks the 75th anniversary of the liberation of Auschwitz. I'm Libby Znaimer, and this is the Zoomer Week in Review. If you're a baby boomer, your idea of how retirement would unfold may have been shaped by years of ads like this.
Imagine visiting yourself in the future.
Well, look who's here.
I know you.
Sure do. I'm you 25 years later.
What am I doing here?
We spend our winters here.
But most Canadians are finding the reality of retirement is not as advertised. I delved into a new survey with Sean Simpson of Ipsos Public Affairs.
We conducted this poll of 1,800 Canadians who are either pre-retired or having recently been retired. And so we're able to compare the expectations of pre-retirees against what those who are retired say is actually the case.
Do you think that part of the gap between expectations and reality are partly because of this romanticized idea many of us have of retirement?
Yeah, I think that's certainly part of it. I mean, we see a lot of advertisements that are geared to boomers, either those people who are retiring soon or have recently retired, and it's all about sipping wine on your terrace overlooking the ocean or a lake at your summer home, or traveling the world, or golfing every day, and everybody's in pristine health. But of course, we know just from our friends and family that in many cases that's not what their retirement years look like. And so that's why we conducted the poll, to see, you know, how different expectations are from the reality of the situation.
Dealing with the first issue is that most people thought that they would know at least a year in advance when the date of the retirement would be. But in fact, only a minority actually knew when they were going to retire. So what was the reason for that?
Yeah, and you know, that seems to be a reasonable expectation that you would know when you're going to retire and when you're going to set the date of retirement. But in fact, only 39% of retired Canadians said that they knew at least a year in advance, and almost 2 in 10 said they had no advance notice at all. And so there are two underlying reasons why that might be the case for so many retirees. One is that they've just been let go by the company without any notice, but the other is also a difficult decision, but one's own health might prevent them from having foresight into when that date might be. If you've got a diagnosis, you might decide to put away the shingle and retire pretty well on the spot.
It's interesting, even retirees who left voluntarily, maybe they've had enough of their particular job. I know quite a few people where in the initial period, they are relieved to be out of whatever situation they wanted to get out of. But then there's kind of a second phase where people get bored. Mm-hmm. Or they get upset because suddenly their phone calls aren't returned.
Yeah, and I think that's why we see as with a lot of retirees, particularly those who like to stay active and busy with their hands, may go out and get a job at Home Depot, for example, because they can use some of their skills and their experience helping others in a job that doesn't seem like work because it's a hobby to them. And I think we're seeing more and more of that, particularly as there are general shortages with labor in Canada. We're pretty well at full capacity with a low unemployment rate, when that's the case, we need to expand the workforce, and the one way to do that is to keep people working longer in life. Hopefully they're doing that because they want to and not because they have to, although a good chunk, 43% of those who intend to work in retirement say it's for financial reasons.
Yeah, and people are working longer.
Working longer and living longer. And, we know the government has been trying to manage its finances by, moving the date for collection of CPP OAS to 67 years old instead of 65. But, of course, that caused a lot of uproar. It's been reversed. But the trend is that people are working longer simply because they're living longer, and they're going to have to pay for that somehow.
Sean Simpson, thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you.
That was Sean Simpson of Ipsos Public Affairs. And that brings us to the end of this week's edition of the Zoomer Week in Review. I'm Libby Znaimer. Thanks for joining me today. Be sure to come back next week to stay up to date with all things Zoomer worldwide.
Zoomer Week in Review is produced by Zeev Hadi, Christine Ross, and Paul Thomas. Technical producer, Justin Eacock. Executive producer, Moses Znaimer. This podcast is proudly produced and presented by the Zoomer Podcast Network, home of great podcasts like Marilyn Lightstone Reads, Idea City on the Air, and The Garden Show.